Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to the 909 podcast. On this week's podcast, we are going to be talking about the Sinead O'Connor documentary called Nothing Compares, which is out this Friday. All three of us who are here on the podcast have seen the film and saw it together in Rathmines last night. So we have regular co-host Andrea Cleary, of course. Hello.
Hello, everyone. How are we?
And special guest and returning guest Louise Bruton. Thank you so much for being here again.
Thank you. We've been planning this for so long.
I accosted Louise yesterday outside the screening and I was like, do you want to come on the podcast? We're very grateful to have you and your always excellent opinions on these things. So,
delighted to be here and have a voice, you know.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of the water cooler moment after the film, after seeing the film. And, you know, we had a bit of that last night, so I thought we'd continue it here. You know, I mean, central to the film, it's a film about the Irish musician Sinead O'Connor, who everyone here who's listening to this will surely know and has differing opinions about. And I think 30 years ago this week, Sinead O'Connor caused uproar when she tore up a picture of the Pope during her musical performance on Saturday Night Live. That was October 3rd, 1992. And the fallout of that is kind of central to the film, and that whole act is central to the film. And what I'm interested in exploring, because, you know, a lot of us who grew up in Ireland have a particular... we've been given a particular story about Sinead O'Connor, and I want to talk about that because I think it's something that it's long overdue, and this film does go to address that. The documentary is by Catherine Ferguson. I think it's her first feature as well. She was there and did a Q&A with Una Mullally afterwards. Have either of you read the Rememberings, the book?
Yeah, I haven't.
Yeah. I could actually find my copy today, but I have read it. It's it does draw from a lot of the same well from in terms of, I mean, that's her autobiography. It's there's a lot more in the book about her music, probably, isn't there? Like, there's a lot more about the individual albums and the reasons, especially after 1993. There's a lot more about each individual release and her motivations for it and stuff like that, which are really interesting. And then obviously her life. So where do we start with this? I mean, what were your first impressions of the film, then? Let's start with your...
Well, I kind of knew going into it that a lot of people were going to be proven wrong. So I'd known for a long time that we've done dirty to Sinead, basically. And we owe her so many apologies, and we do not deserve her forgiveness by any means whatsoever. But I think a lot of people would have gone in with a certain perception of her, and then their maybe whole foundations of who Sinead O'Connor is going to be completely taken apart, because we've just been fed such outright lies about her and fed just so many kind of patronizing opinions on her. But she was just so right from the very beginning about everything that she criticized. She criticized the Irish Catholic Church. She criticized racism. She criticized the treatment of women kind of across the world, the mistreatment of women, whether they were kind of ordinary women who were kind of raped in their hometowns, or if they were women kind of living under the spotlight of fame. And whenever she cried out all of these things, people were like, oh, that silly drag of a woman. And that was just so frustrating, because the things that she's saying in all of the archive footage, that's what we're all saying today. That's what we're all calling out today. And it just seems so ludicrous to me that she was villainized and she was just so widely made fun of by absolutely everybody. Like, there's one bit of footage where it has Madonna actually taking the piss out of Sinead O'Connor, ripping up the image of the Pope. And it's like, that, you know, Madonna and Sinead O'Connor should have been on the same side. Everybody turned against her. And I think I was born in the late 80s, so I grew up with Sinead O'Connor just always being there. And I was always kind of told what she was about before I had the capacity to decide what she was about. And I think that's probably the same for like a lot of people. And it's just so, like, I can't get over the fact that people just turned against her the way that they did, and people just decided to say that she was an idiot because she cared about other people. Like, that's always been her main goal.
Hey, what was your impressions?
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I was born in 1990, so similar to Louise, I was very much told who Sinead O'Connor was and what she stood for. In my house, she's mad, but fair play to her kind of vibe when it came to Sinead O'Connor. And I think just watching the film, and I think the director, Catherine Ferguson, and Una Mullally commented afterwards, something that's so astounding watching all of this footage of her is they pointed out the consistency with which she has always delivered her message. She has always fought against racism and sexism and the power of the Catholic Church and how it wields that power over women and children especially. What struck me was I didn't know about her, the abuse she suffered from her family. I knew that she was in care for a while, and the amount of times the word care is used in that film, it got to the stage where I was like, wow, that word really has lost all meaning, because we never talk about children in care when they're actually being cared for. It's always when very, very much the opposite is happening. But I didn't know about the abuse she suffered at the hands of her mother, and there's some very, very striking moments in it. And then when you see, I mean, something that everybody was talking about, a water cooler moment, something that everybody, you and I, ran into afterwards, Niall, was talking about, was how her interviews, and specifically with Gay Byrne, came across in the film. You know, she was interviewed early on the Late Late Show in her career. And one of the first things that said to her is, a comment on her looks and the fact that she shaved her head, and that the mammies at home would be worried that their children are going to grow up like her, and also that she was a troublemaker, and she gave she had to move schools all of these different times. And then of course you do find out that she was a victim of abuse, both at home and by the state. And it's the kind of the tone deafness or the turn in the other cheek when it comes to, you know, absolutely everybody who was in charge of caring for Sinead up until the point when she moves to London and she makes friends with people, you know, kind of Rasta communities, other Irish people in London, and she kind of finds her family there. But up until that point, she really had no one. And I don't think I really understood the scale of how lonely she was as a young person. And it makes sense now, listening to her music all day today. I had her on all day, and I was listening to her first album in particular, and it all really, really clicked with me, I think probably for the first time, you know.
Yeah, certainly context will help for music, her music and her early music particularly. I'm going to play just the audio of the trailer just to give people an idea. But the first thing you'll hear as part of the trailer starts and ends the film. It's the footage from the Bob Dylan tribute concert, which happened a few weeks after the SNL incident. You will hear the audience booing and clapping in equal measure, kind of synonymous with how people viewed her. And she's asked to sing a song, and there's a very long, awkward silence, which you won't hear because it's a trailer. But the only person I saw be actively kind to her in the film is Kris Kristofferson, who introduces her.
Off great.
Yeah, he does. He really does. He says, what does he say to about
don't let
her?
The bastards get you down.
Yeah, he says that. He goes on stage when she's faltering a little bit and does say that to her. But before that, he'd introduce her with about saying, here's a person of great courage and integrity. And that's something that is just really, really palpable from watching this film. She never deviates from her integrity, her message, her central message, her desire to stand up and defend people who aren't being defended elsewhere. So here's just a refresher, and if you haven't heard or watched the trailer, this will help.
Ladies and gentlemen, Sinead O'Connor.
Such a shock for me to become a pop star. It's not what I wanted. I just wanted to scream.
Everybody in music has a story in terms of what they went through.
Every person's duty to themselves is to act on their feelings and to say when they think something is wrong.
And take the consequences.
I imagine so.
The level when Nothing Compares to You became a hit was extraordinary.
This song went number one everywhere in the world.
I had come across an article about families who had been trying to lodge complaints against the church for sexual abuse and were being silenced.
I had booked her on Saturday Night Live.
Basically, everything I had been raised to believe was a lie.
She blows the candle out. She goes off stage. I had gone into the dressing room after her and I said, you know, I can't get you out of this. And she said, you know what? I don't want you to.
If I acted at the time in the way that I felt would be most true to myself.
I wasn't thinking to myself, I must be strong. I didn't know I was strong. An artist's job is sometimes to create the difficult conversations that need to be had. That's what art is for.
My name is Sinead O'Connor. I am a woman. I have something to offer.
They tried to bury me. They didn't realize I was a seed.
So, yeah, I think this film is totally worth watching for the reason alone of just watching her talk to whoever who's ever interviewing her about whatever it is, whatever topic that they're bringing, whatever loaded kind of idea that they're bringing to her. She's steadfast in how she responds, in how she dictates herself, how she holds herself. We will talk a little bit about the gay barn thing in a bit as well, because I have a couple of clips. Which maybe might contextualize that a bit more. I think it was a complex relationship and maybe a troublesome one. But we certainly talked about a couple of different artists before, a couple of women artists on the podcast before about, first of all, there's the Britney experience, and this is kind of like, and then MIA as well. So I'm seeing a couple of parallels there. Certainly the MIA experience at the Super Bowl when she flips the bird and everyone goes nuts, the establishment goes nuts at her and her career takes a nosedive. Then you see with Britney, it's somebody, it's the opposite. It's like somebody who's actually in total control of what they want to say, but that scares people even more. And it's, there really is a confrontation there. And the confrontation does not come from Sinead O'Connor. It comes from everyone else reacting. It's like saying, calling out somebody for a certain thing and they're getting immediately defensive. There's a defensiveness there that happens when, like, Peaches in the film says describes Sinead O'Connor in the 90s as non-binary, intersectional, beyond feminist. And that is language that we didn't have then, and we certainly do have now, and the young people especially have are au fait with it now. And it's really interesting, I think, to just draw the parallels between the 30 years from then. Someone who was just simply stating a lot of facts and standing up for people, and then, you know, things like shaving her head and how it became such a big deal and how it became one of the only things that people talked about. Like, there's that Dan Rather clip in the film where he's like, oh, was it Dan Rather? I think he's like, oh, I know I shouldn't ask you about this, but I'm going to have to ask you because people will be wondering why I didn't ask you about you, why you have your head shaved, you know.
It's the only thing I knew about her as a child, I think. I knew that she shaved her head and she sang Nothing Compares to You. And those were the two things. And her having a shaved head, it was always like the adults around me would always kind of point out, oh, but isn't she so beautiful? She can carry it. Yeah. You know? There was always this kind of like, oh, she can get away with it. And I think that was in the media as well. And it was, you know, she's obviously very, very beautiful. She's got the longest eyelashes of any person I've ever seen in my entire life. But there was still always this kind of grasp for femininity when it came to Sinead O'Connor. And there's some interesting moments in the film where she's, you know, she's taking part in some photo shoots, and the ones in which she's the most comfortable is when she gets to play with her gender expression. And it's not that she was, you know, butch for her whole life, or it's not that she was expressing her gender in a non-binary way her whole life. Like, she was playing with femininity and playing with masculinity and playing with whatever lies betwixt, you know, so many years before a lot of us, even within kind of queer cultures, were exposed to that idea. But like, it is so fascinating how people were just so fixated on the fact that this beautiful young woman would shave her head. But it is emblematic of everything that she was trying to do. And like, you hear a lot about stars nowadays who are like, I don't want to be put in heels and lip gloss and pranced around and things like that. But she was really among the first to not only say no to it, but to kind of go in the complete opposite direction. Yeah. And it was, yeah,
like she says, "I'm not a pop star. I just wanted to scream. I always wanted to scream, yeah, you know, into a mic." And she says that in the book as well. And obviously, there's parallels there with the head shaving and Britney as well, in terms of you know, a reaction, and mostly not her, but how other people react to that. It is interesting as well as like watching her as, there's some great footage in the documentary of her as an early singer, singing at a wedding, I think when she was like 14 or 15, around the time that she was in the care home, in inverted brackets, which is where she met a lot of the women who were essentially in the Magdalen laundries. And her, it's pretty harrowing, her description of the old women who were crying out for help or crying for nurses and never were attended to, kind of says a lot. And then she talks about her obsession with the Bible. Is that something I think in the film I would like to hear more of? It's a complex relationship she has with religion. She says, I wanted to see what was in this book that they were using to oppress my people. And I am interested in knowing more. I'd love to know more about, because that is the other thing that's been running parallel in terms of the Sinead O'Connor story of the last 10 or 15 years, especially, is like her conversion to Islam, you know, talking about Rastafarianism and then being a priest and all that kind of stuff. So it's like, it's very complex, and it's not really something that's really touched in the book that much. It's not like it's.
Well, I think it is quite interesting that her fascination with religion and her fascination with music all comes back to her mother. Her mother was the big kind of pushing force in religion and music. So it gave her kind of two of her biggest loves and also two of her biggest, I don't know, kind of destructors in One Fell Swoop. And Swift. Anyway, and the relation back to her mother was just this, I don't know, I feel like it was just this dead weight upon her that the thing that she loved the most, which was singing, was the one thing that would calm down her abusive mother. So she just has this kind of endless cycle of everything going back to a great source of pain in her life. But also I think her fascination with religion as well links up quite tightly to the level of celebrity that she had, because it's no wonder that a lot of the big celebrities, a lot of them have turned to Islam at some point. They have turned away from Christianity. They have gotten deeper. They've gone towards Scientology. Like they've gone towards Kabbalah. Because when you get to that level of fame and you get to that level of kind of wealth and notoriety, you're probably like, is this it? So there is probably this big question of kind of like, what is the meaning of life? So I think some people like Sinead O'Connor kind of joins the ranks of like, say, Madonna and also Britney Spears, who have explored religion further to be like, is this all that life has to offer? Where it's people who have experienced the extreme highs and the extreme lows. And obviously Sinead has experienced the extreme lows from basically the day she was born. And then when she was 20 years of age, suddenly well known across the world, and now a young mother as well. So it's an interesting journey that she's gone on, to always see her mother in the work that she does, and to always kind of come back to religion, even though she blames it for the kind of destruction of kind of all women in Ireland and women across the globe as well.
Yeah, I thought it was amazing how the way that she spoke in the 80s and 90s about women and the Catholic Church and abortion in particular, same language as we were using in the Eighth Amendment, like repeal the Eighth campaign, same language, right to choose, you know, the idea of the Catholic Church having a hand in your body, like none of this was new. And it broke my heart. There was a moment she's at an abortion rights march, and someone puts a microphone in her face and she says, "We will have legalized abortion in this country soon." And, you know, I'm very, very glad and grateful that she is around to have seen that happen. But like, what a long time it was that she had to wait, you know. And she was just, yeah, I just came out of it feeling like she was so ahead of her time with all of this, you know, and with especially everything to do with the church. There was never any doubt in her mind that what was happening was happening. And these were before the big stories broke, you know, these were before anybody had any clue. And to just be treated as if she was this mad woman making up conspiracy theories, it's a tale as old as time when it comes to women in this country and the church. And it was really like, it was really empowering, I think, to kind of watch it and see that she is vindicated in what it was that she was saying the entire time. And I keep going back to that idea of consistency, like her message hasn't changed. You know, she's dipped in and out of the Catholic Church. She's, as you said, Louise, like she's now a Muslim woman. You know, it's her relationship with religion is very, very complex. And I think it would be easy to look at her and say that she's a hypocrite or whatever, to because she's, you know, joining some other organized religion. But yeah, I think it's incredibly, incredibly complex because of that kind of interlinking that is her mother, religion, pain, abuse, suffering, and also the kind of the elation getting to sing in the church and singing to kind of, you know, calm her mother down in dark moments as well. So it's yeah, she's just very, very complex, and she expresses those complexities brilliantly. There's no point in the film where I'm like, oh god, I don't know what she's going on about. She's so clear,
crystal clear, you know, about all of it in terms of anything she's talking about. And she's so, and she knows the language, and she understands the intent behind, especially with the, when it comes to talking about abortion rights and like the right to choose and things like that, and then knowing, you know, what to say about a very complex issue and not be dissuaded from it as well. It's just so impressive.
And it's amazing because her voice changes as she gets older. Her voice naturally, her speaking voice naturally deepens. And you have moments in the film where, you know, it's a section about one topic and you'll hear her talking in her much higher, much younger voice, saying the same thing as she's still saying now in her much deeper, much kind of older and wiser voice. But the message is the exact same. She's never, you know, waned from it. She's never strayed away from that central message of just equality and justice. She's incredible. I really came out of it like now just completely in love with her. Like,
it also was worth, yeah. I think, you know, the film in full does play the SNL clip, and just there's a couple of examples, certainly on stage, of that steely determinism, not being dissuaded from whether people are literally booing you, or, you know, you were like, no, I've chickened out because it's too dangerous. But here's just briefly the very stark audio that happens on Saturday Night Live. Everyone knows about the ripping of the picture, but immediately beforehand she sings War, the Bob Marley song, and an a cappella as well. So a very unique way to perform it as well.
We have confidence in the victory of good over evil. Fight the real enemy.
So it's interesting, I think, that, you know, there was some allusions to in the Q&A yesterday with Catherine Ferguson, that the reaction in the US has been mixed, it seems. Have you seen anything about that?
No, I haven't. But I can imagine, like, the fact that there was such a huge anti-American narrative created around her, because at one point she refused to come on stage at an American festival after they played the American national anthem. And it was just so funny. It was just this, like, kind of like match that just like lit up the entire world. And suddenly everybody was trying to kind of destroy her CDs, boycott her, remove her from airplay. That maybe that sentiment just kind of continues to ring through. It's like, if you take a stand against America once, that's you kind of forever, in this kind of light. And there was like one thing that actually kept kind of playing in my mind throughout the film, and I hope I'm not the only person that was thinking this. I don't know if anybody remembers in 2013 when there was the great war between Miley Cyrus and Sinead O'Connor.
No, I don't remember this.
She wrote
an open letter to Miley Cyrus, basically being like, you can make your own decisions, you can dress how you liked.
You don't have to be
kind of stripped half naked in music videos. And it was coming from a place of care, but jump. Also, it's not great to tell any woman kind of what they can and cannot wear.
No, of course.
But this just turned into this big kind of spat, and that whole sentiment came back up again that Sinead O'Connor was anti-American. And I suppose in the time that it was, kind of late 80s, early 90s, Irish people still would have had this kind of terrorist attachment to them. So the fact that there was a rebel international rock star, pop star sensation who had a shaved head and wore leather jackets, it might have just kind of fed into this wrong idea that a lot of other people had about Irish people. So I can imagine that it will take a lot of work for that to dim down. And I kind of feel like Sinead O'Connor probably in America will be kind of known almost as this kind of folk hero who kind of some people have heard of, or only some people get. And she'll never really kind of get her day until, I don't know, you'll have someone like maybe Billie Eilish just going, my biggest inspiration is Sinead O'Connor. Like, I know John Grant has said in many interviews over the years that Sinead O'Connor is one of his leading inspirations. But, you know, that's not going to convince the thousands, the mainstream, you know, that Sinead O'Connor really did pave the way for so many performers, so many artists. More than maybe anybody else did. Could Madonna have been as rebellious as she was if Sinead O'Connor wasn't the most rebellious one? There's just so many kind of connectors there. And I think maybe if there are mixed reviews in America, it's probably because they don't admit that they were wrong in the first place.
Well, I think the sentiment of being protective of Americanness and kind of pro America, like that's come back around. You know, we've all seen that since 2016, but it's been bubbling up for a while, that being anti-American can get you, you know, shut out of showbiz. But it is those kind of conservative sort of Gen X boomers who would go to a Bob Dylan birthday concert and not want to hear what Sinead O'Connor had to say, which was pointed out in the film, you know, like what are you doing going to see Bob Dylan live if you're going to be anti Sinead O'Connor, you know, what she did when she refused to play after the national anthem was played was exercising freedom of speech, you know, and there's this idea that our folk heroes are, as in Americans, our folk heroes have kind of fought the good fight and it's for the America we have today, so we should be grateful. When it's not the case at all. And I was really happy that somebody in the film pointed that out, because it's just so ludicrous that you could stand there and boo. And that scene is incredible.
It is, yeah. And I mean, it starts and ends the film.
The half and half. And it really is half and half. And it really does capture how people felt about her at the time. And I mean, I imagine even there was more people, if you were to survey 100 people on the streets of America beforehand, I doubt it was even half and half. It was just, you know, the people that were in the room, some of them were, you know, sort of understanding of what Bob Dylan was trying to do and what Sinead O'Connor was trying to do. But it's an astounding scene. I find it even more astounding, maybe because I've seen it less than the Pope scene.
Yeah.
Because she just, the absolute conviction, you know, on SNL, it's a performance and there's nobody shouting her down, but this is an auditorium full of people booing her. And, you know, there's been threats made against her life for being anti-American. You know, she's had death threats. People close to her have had death threats, and to do what she did just was such a marker of bravery. And it's incredible that now, these days, the idea of a protest in a live performance at the Grammys or at the Super Bowl or some kind of, you know, broadcast live performance is sort of understood as just being part of it. You know, like we've seen Beyonce do it. We've seen Kendrick Lamar do it. But Sinead was doing it when protesting wasn't part of the musical performance at all. It existed somewhere outside of it, and she brought it into the auditorium, which I found that really interesting, how that lineage kind of happens, you know.
Yeah, and she, you know, stood up for
the NWA thing,
the Grammys,
the Public Enemy thing as well, and like she's just always been on the right side of history, and it's just so incredible to see how wrong everybody else was.
Yeah,
I mean, we were all side-eyeing Gay Byrne.
Well, there's that incredible moment in the film with that American feminist, Camille Anna Paglia, who says, in Sinead O'Connor's case, child abuse was justified, which is just absolutely incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes in a montage of kind of reaction videos or like SNL.
Joe Pesci
on SNL a week later. That was a week later. Sandy would have smacked her. If he had been there, and loads of, and then with the Madonna one as well. A few months later, I believe the Madonna thing happened.
What picture did Madonna rip up?
I had it open there. Hold on a sec, I'll find it.
Because I couldn't see, I couldn't figure out who it was. I was just like, I was so shocked that Madonna
Joey
was doing Botafogo, something.
Joey Buttafogo, who is
okay,
a body shop owner from Long Island. Oh, he
okay.
What? Okay, I don't know if this was before or afterwards.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
He raped somebody and went served 4 months in jail. I'm not sure when this happened, so I'm not sure if this was...
Okay. Well, if she ripped up his picture after that...
It was 1991 that happened.
Then I get it.
I think 92. Okay. Yeah, so I don't know. Very strange thing for Madonna to do. Yeah, okay. So with the gay burn thing, I think that's a lot of, for a lot of people who are listening to this, who are Irish, who, you know, our understanding of Sinead O'Connor comes from her appearances a lot on The Late Late. And she appeared many, many times. Now, I tried to review as much as I could today. Certainly in the film, like we were saying last night, the way that he talks to her reeks of patronizing sexism. He knows what he wants to say. He's cleverly couching it in a, this is what other people would say, but I'm not saying this, but I am saying this, you know, what have you done to yourself, how dare you, kind of thing. I think that relationship is very complex, actually. And while I think Gay Byrne, the more you see footage of him in recent years, the more you're like, whoa, he was maybe not the national treasure that everyone thinks of him as. He wasn't the paternal TV dad that everyone thinks of him, but he certainly had he seemed to have a vicious side as well.
Yeah, I didn't grow up in a late household, so I don't have that same graph that everybody else seems to have for Gay Byrne. But I know I was saying this to you last night, Niall, that one of my main memories of Sinead O'Connor growing up was when she appeared on the Late Late Show. And Terry Wogan and Graham Norton were the other guests. So I think must have been around maybe 97 or 98, maybe in around when Graham Norton was suddenly really famous around Father Ted times. I think it was around then. And one of the exchanges was that Gay was saying to Sinead that he looks at her like she's a daughter. And she repeated back saying, I look to you like you're a father. So that was a public declaration between the two. And this is also when... Sinead was a practicing priest, so she was wearing the collar and everything. But everything she said, it was just the smirks from all the men that were up at that desk. It was those desks, wasn't it, at the Late Late Show? Everything she was asked and everything she said, all the men who were sharing the same stage for her that night were just goading her. And it was just so... It was so just blatant and it was so intentional. And she, again, just kind of held such great decorum, didn't break her stance, didn't kind of call them out. And that was something I always kind of admired whenever she was being interviewed by all of these people who were always putting her in the naughty corner. She never kind of called them out. She just kind of stood her ground. And it's such an amazing thing. It's like what you were saying there, Andrea, just so, so consistent. And I just kind of want to know when everybody else changed. Like, when is everybody who's going to be looking back on this footage of themselves, are they not just embarrassed to the core? Like, she was so wildly outnumbered by everybody. But now all of those same people are singing from the same hymn sheet that she is. And it's just this thing of, like, are we still idiots because we're pretending like we didn't behave this way? And just there's just a lot of reparations that are due, like in so many different shapes and forms. And I just kind of, I want to know when people are going to put their hands up and say, yeah, we were absolute idiots. And
it's only a reflection of watching this kind of footage, like we talked about before, about watching the Chris Evans TFI Friday show and realizing how negative it was and how damaging it was to women, and especially, and how absolute leering and horrible he was to people. What an absolute, like, and that was just entertainment then. And I think it's only when you see those things, it's when you see how far we, like, how things have changed. And I think that's, yeah, I mean, certainly there's a lot of people, there was a lot of quotes from newspapers and like people like Phil Collins on the screen last night about awards and people saying, oh, well, she doesn't like money. She can give her money back, you know?
It's Roger Daltrey suddenly were like, it's like, excuse me, you're like these people who are meant to be rebels. It just doesn't sit with me. But I'm also concerned as well that this is cyclical, that we're going to fall back into a phase where suddenly caring isn't important again. And we are seeing shades of that kind of in different kind of media outlets and in general conversation as well. And that's kind of my main fear, where it's going to be that someone else is going to be villainized in the next while for actually speaking out for the rights of others. Mm.
I think we've seen it a little bit with some women in the industry, the fascination with the fact that Billie Eilish wears baggy clothes comes to mind as a kind of a comparison to how we were all so fascinated with why Sinead O'Connor shaved her head, for example, and this idea of what is the point you're trying to make? And then if somebody tries to get across the point they're trying to make, they're just, you know, they're either aping women's issues to get attention or, you know, these days Sinead would be called, you know, being woke or being a snowflake or anything like that. I absolutely agree that it is that we're seeing this kind of cycle come back around again, and this kind of disdain for women who speak openly. I mean, Pussy Riot, who were we saw a flash of them on the screen last night. I think when it comes to how we reflect on their career in however many decades to come, I think we're all going to be speaking very, very differently about Pussy Riot than we have been in kind of, you know, previous decades and the work that they have done, which was again a path paved by Sinead O'Connor. But there is a way to be outspoken in this industry if you're a woman, while still maintaining the allure of femininity. And if you deviate in any way from that, and the borders on that have shifted somewhat, but there's still a very kind of rigid way to perform activism if you are especially a young woman in the industry. And I don't know if all that much has actually changed. It's just that I guess people can't be as blatant about it. We certainly wouldn't see a young Irish woman be treated by Ryan Tuberty. And this is in no way me saying that Ryan Tuberty is a good broadcaster or that he is in any way kind of morally better than Gay Byrne. It's just the times have changed. But I still see the sneering, leery attitude towards young women in the industry who are trying to think about how conversations that Denise Tyler, for example, has had on national television. Yeah. And questions that she's asked that I just don't think were okay for her to be asked.
Same with Tommy Tiernan's show when asked when he had Lowe on. He was like, so where are you from really? When he was like, oh, I'm trying to make a joke of this, but it's actually, you know, that's...
Yeah, it's not okay. And there'll be super cuts of those in a few years, in the years to come. And I just don't think it's improved. It's just that it's shifted.
Well, like another big thing that I was thinking about throughout the film and kind of most of today actually is, so Sinead O'Connor's, one of her main ammos was just pointing out abuses of power, abuse in the church, abuse against children. And her career was effectively shelved in so many different ways. And then when known abusers like, say, or Kelly, who are only put into prison now, when we all knew, like I when I look back on the Or Kelly, like I always had heard about Or Kelly being an abuser. Even though I was...
We all heard jokes.
Even though I was 10 years old and in Ireland in pre-internet, I knew about Or Kelly being an abuser, and he's only in prison now for it. Do you know, it's the writing is on the wall, but only for some. And that's the thing that kind of, that really does, it kind of gets to me and it kind of chills me as well. Because at the moment, a lot of people are trying to kind of reveal who the real baddies are. But it kind of like what I've said again, just how long will that last? Because there has been kind of people kind of coming out with the likes of kind of Harvey Weinstein saying, well, maybe we can't be painting everybody in the same coat of color as the rest of the abusers. So it's It's just interesting to see what we're doing with information now and how we're just kind of what side we're pinning that kind of abuse to.
It's as though a movement has a sell-by date, because it will automatically, according to some people, become a witch hunt or become something sinister. It can't maintain a momentum. Not everyone can be as bad as Harvey Weinstein. And no, not everyone is as bad as Harvey Weinstein. Nobody's saying that. But, you know, it's the idea of we're still living in a world and in an industry that adheres to the few bad apples idea, instead of actually looking at the system that these people are working within. And whether that's the music industry or whether that's, you know, Magdalene laundries or the education system or, you know, beyond Ireland, there is this idea that it's a few bad apples and we can't treat the whole system as though it's spoiled, when that's not the case. And Sinead O'Connor has known that is not the case ever since she was a child, and then when she went into the music industry, ever since she was 20 years old, you know.
One of the specters of this film is Prince, for obvious reasons, because the title Nothing Compares to You, Nothing Compares is a reference to Nothing Compares to You, the song that he wrote for that Sinead O'Connor popularized. And as the film makes clear with a title sequence at the end, his estate did not give permission for the song to be used. So they have some recordings, some rushes from the video shoot, which are very beautiful and actually some of the best things that you see in the film in terms of intimacy and just backstage kind of, or background portraits. I thought the music by Irene and Linda Buckley did a wonderful job of recreating a very classic song in its own way, and their music throughout was also wonderful. And but yeah, the Prince thing is interesting as well, because she's obviously in the book, she talks about him and how the bizarre story, you know, we're talking about people, you know, who like I respect, like I love the music of Prince, but I've heard, you know, dodgy things about him, and she is the one that she has called him a violent abuser of women as well. She wrote about a story that she went to visit him in his Hollywood mansion, and he chastised her for swearing in interviews, and then kept trying to get his butler to serve her soup that she didn't want, and then suggested a pillow fight, and then put something really hard in a pillow just so he could hit her. And so she left and escaped on foot from her house, from his house, and he kind of chases her down in his car. So it's this bizarre story, like Prince is this macabre, like cartoon villain all of a sudden. And, you know, I don't dispute her account of it, but it is, she doesn't shy away from showing people who are fully, you know, have the full respect of pop culture and anyone around who pays attention to it. And she is still, and that's still calling people out, even, you know, in the last few years, she has said stuff like that. So what it is.
The Prince thing is really interesting, because this is somebody like Sinead O'Connor isn't nobody saying this, you know. She's somebody who has a track record of speaking out against systemic and individual abuse, and being right. And the Prince story made next to no waves, you know, considering if that was any other woman in the industry who made those claims against Prince, I think that would have been a far greater story. But we, at that stage, we had gotten so used to Sinead O'Connor being mad and being just, you know, finding something to be angry about, that it was very, very easy for everybody to just kind of sweep it under the rug and not address the fact that their hero, or somebody that they greatly admire, could be an abuser. And that's something that we've all been dealing with in the past number of years. You know, we've all had to stop listening to some people's music in the past few years. But I do find it amazing and pretty unsurprising that it wasn't it's not even, it's barely a footnote on how we discuss Prince and his legacy. I think it's probably more common to talk about the allegations against David Bowie, which are relatively uncommonly spoken about, than it would be against Prince. And Prince's accuser was Sinead O'Connor, you know, like an absolutely huge name in the music industry. It's just so emblematic of the fact that people just think that she's just making shit up all the time.
She's the mad Irish woman, and that's how a lot mad of people Irish still woman. See her. And I think this film goes a long way to recontextualizing who she is as a person and vindicating her for her character as well. A really amazing person. I would certainly need to know more about the rest of her life really now in the context of this and how she moved through it. Clearly, she talks about 10 years, and as she says this in the book, 10 years that she can't really remember what happened after that. And that's trauma, and that's a horrible situation to go through. So understandably, you know, she went through something that most people will never understand, like the entire world, what it must have felt like, the entire world hating you and you've been thrown in a bin, essentially. And she had to deal with that. And she said, I didn't realize I was strong. I just was, you know, and she was. And very few people could take that level of criticism and abuse. And as she proves time and time again throughout the film, she's able to stand against that and show who she is and state her own case. And I think for me, that was that's the main takeaway from it. It's like, she's actually incredible. She's an incredible person. And any of the things that have happened since then are a result of going through a very traumatic, huge, very public thing like that. So I think that's what I'll take away with me for sure.
Louise, I'm interested in your thoughts on the kind of her downfall, as it were, kind of now contextualized in everything that we've learned about how we've treated Britney Spears, for example, and just within the kind of pop realm. Do you think we've learned anything now after the Britney reckoning, after the, you know, hopefully now with this film, the Sinead O'Connor reckoning, or like, do you think we're getting any way closer to treating female pop stars in a nice way? I'm judging by your face, the answer's no.
No, it's
but I'm interested in what parallels you draw, I think, between those two kind of instances.
Well, yeah, there's clearly such stark parallels between it all, and it's just unbelievable that the moment of Britney's gone mad is her shaving her head. Like, it's just it's that the comparison there is just too, it's just too close. But watching kind of Britney Spears now in her kind of her newfound era of freedom, where she still doesn't have that much freedom, people are still basically trying to claim that she's crazy and claim that she needs to be locked up and claim that she's unfit to be around her children. And then that's what you're hearing from the people who are meant to be closest to her and the people who are meant to care for her the most, which is her blood, her children, her parents, her siblings. And I mean, and this is a point I've made of so many times, like, fame is toxic. Fame, that, like, very good things come from fame, and very good things come from people who become famous at a young age. And there is a thing with kind of powerful women that scares people, and whatever level of power that is, whether it's to have the voice and ferocity of Sinead O'Connor, or to have the kind of the presence and the kind of the popdom of Britney Spears, people don't like it, and they still don't like it. We've mentioned, like, just think of anyone, any female performer over the years who has had something to say, and there will always be like, oh, but did you hear this as well? Like, you can, like, I'm thinking of like Alanis Morissette, I'm thinking about Grace Jones, I'm thinking about like Tracy Chapman, I'm thinking about Courtney Love. All of these people who speak on behalf of other people who have been abused, they're all considered liars still. And that's the conversation that just hasn't changed. It's whenever someone is claiming abuse, people are just as loudly claiming that they're liars. And these women who are put under the limelight and who want to use their fame for good, just that tag of liar will never be removed from them, because the rest of the world just views views, just that if there is able to say this out public, there is able to say it as a lie. And yeah, I'm not sure if that's going to change anytime soon. Like, as I mentioned, with the Ora Kelly case, and when you think of, say, like Bill Cosby, Harvey Weinstein, how many women does it have to take to say the same story for people to believe it?
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't, that goes for the same, whether you're world famous or someone from a small town with not much to your name. Like, it's,
yeah,
I mean, it's, it, yeah, the parallels between it all is just, it's too stark, too close. And it's just really sad. And it kind of frustrates me now that we have this movie out. People are going to be kind of regretting what they've done, but it's going to change nothing. And I hate that that's such a dour way to kind of wrap that up. But yeah.
Well, I think we have to change how women, particularly in pop music, are viewed, because it is that double-edged sword of, if you speak out, you're a liar. But if you don't speak out, you're just a cog in the pop machine, and you don't have anything. Like, women have to have something meaningful to say, but not too meaningful. Nothing that's going to rock the establishment or, you know, question anything. And it's literally impossible to toe that line. You're either like, you can't be respected by men in the industry. No matter which way you play it, because if you speak out, you know, you're rocking the boat too much. If you don't speak out, you're just a puppet for the music industry, and there's nothing authentic about you. And yeah, I agree that the world doesn't seem to be getting any better. We're just sort of reframing the abuse that we're willing to allow women to go through. You know, I think the reason why the Harvey Weinstein case was so strong was because there was so many women, and there was women who are known, and it's almost as if you need to have something to lose. You know, you need to be putting, like Amber Heard, you know, somebody who was treated just despicably by absolutely everybody. And it's almost as if you have to have something to lose in order to speak out against anybody. You can't possibly gain anything. You're not allowed to be able to gain anything in people's eyes. And if we keep treating women as being people who are either looking for fame or money or notoriety, or trying to prop up their careers by piggybacking on a movement, then absolutely nothing is going to change. But I think what's fascinating about this film is that Sinead O'Connor has had nothing to lose for a very, very long time. She never wanted to be a pop star. She states that, like, explicitly very, very early on in her career, that she never wanted to be a pop star. And I think the parallels between her and Britney Spears are so interesting, because here's Sinead O'Connor, who was, you know, forced into being a pop star, not wanting to be one. Here's Britney Spears, who wanted to be a pop star and wasn't allowed to get out. And both of them were just trapped, completely trapped in this industry. And, you know, Sinead got out one way or another. You know, she was forced out, whereas Britney Spears was forced to keep going, keep performing, keep making money. And it's the two sides of that coin. There's no happy medium for women in the industry, as long as it's men running the record labels, as long as it's men deciding who plays the shows and for how long, as long as it's men who are managers and bookers and, you know, who are running the industry, like, or who are writing the articles or reviewing the records, you know. There's no feasible way to be a woman in the industry and not be hurt by it.
Well, certainly the discussion we had a year and a half ago about the Framing Britney Spears documentary is somewhat a companion piece to this podcast episode, for sure. So that is worth listening to. That is called The Free Britney, the Framing Britney Spears documentary. Of course, Louise, you joined us for that as well. And so, yeah, there'll be more of that. Yeah, well, I guess where do we leave it? I think, like, ultimately, this film is out Friday. I think people need to see it, and I think people should see it. because I just think, for the many reasons we discussed, it is worth seeing this recontextualization, even if there are concerns about whether things are going to change or not. And yeah, it's out Friday.
Yeah, how great would it be if they played it instead of the Late Late Show on Friday, so that you could have that exact audience that had misconception of Sinead O'Connor for the entirety of her career. Yeah, and
it would be that Twitter audience would be going absolutely crazy for that if it was shown, because it is shown. I think it is being shown in the US on Showtime, who are one of the distributors of it. They're broadcasting it on Sunday in the US, so anyone in America can watch that for sure. But so it is showing.
Yeah, the director last night was saying that there's that after some of the screening, she found that a lot of the young women who came to see the film were really galvanized afterwards and really, really angry. And I thought that was amazing. I really, really hope that a lot of people go to see it, because, I mean, I came out of it absolutely furious, and I came out of it feeling that kind of, you know, that sense of this is just so unfair. And like you said at the beginning, Louise, like that there are reparations due, like there is an apology from RTE due to Sinead O'Connor. And I know that she came back, last year, sometime during lockdown, wasn't it? What was the year that she appeared for the first time in a very, very long time and sang on the Late Late Show. So obviously she must have made her peace with RTE in order for her to do that. But I know Gay Byrne is no longer with us, but it wasn't only him. You know, somebody booked her on that show that you were talking about, Louise, with men smirking at her, and somebody thought that would be a nice lineup in order to humiliate her. And I think that there is, you know, apologies due for that, and there's apologies due to her from a lot of people. And it's just, yeah, it's an incredible film. I really encourage people to go to see it, whether you are a fan of Sinead O'Connor or not. You learn a lot about Ireland, actually. If anybody is a listener not in Ireland, you learn a lot about Ireland's relationship with the church in the film.
And honestly, seeing that footage of the Phoenix Park is just like seeing some sort of alien planet that I'm very familiar with.
But it's just like, this is also recent, you know, like when even with the footage that they had from the marriage referendum day, I was like, God, we look like we're from Donkey's years ago as well. Like this is all of our recent history. And the fact that there's people still suffering at the hands of things from the 60s, 70s and 80s in Ireland. And I just kind of hope that this is sort of like the wake up call, the shock to not let history repeat itself.
Yeah. Okay. So film is called Nothing Compares, the Sinead O'Connor documentary that is in theaters and film and that is in theaters from Friday. Thanks, Louise and Andrea, as ever. And good to see you both real life yesterday. It's patreon.com/909 if you want to join our Discord or keep up with what's going on and help us fund the podcast. Louise, you got anything going on you'd like to plug?
Yes, I do. I'm going to be playing in All My Friends next Friday the 14th, I believe. And I'm also going to be playing two nights at the Westville Festival on the 28th of October and
two nights
and the 31st, I believe, the Friday and Sunday, whatever
lovely
those dates are.
West is best, I hear.
Yeah, apparently so. I'm going to rock that. Yeah.
And All My Friends is a new pub on Mead Street as well. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Great spot.
Lovely. Okay, great. Thanks for joining us. Nah. Andrea, anything you'd like to plug before we go? Nah. Okay, thanks,
Bye.
Mel. Talk to you next week. Bye.
The only times that I've been completely and utterly terrified are the two times that I've done the Late Late Show.
Why?
Because, not because of you, Gay, I can assure you, but just, I don't know, it's because you grow up all your life in Ireland and it's the Late Late Show, you know, and Gay Byrne and all this, you know, and so it's quite a sort of terrifying prospect.
If I only had a known, I would have rushed over and held you in my little arms.
Oh, you're very good to me.
The same orders are given by her. You said yes. So, how are you? You're right. You're well. Well, no, because people worry about you because we've read all these things about you. And
I don't know what way I'm supposed to answer those kind of questions, because in the one way I want to talk about music, and another way, the only thing that does bother me about all this stuff is that I've kind of dealt with 25 years of this, you know, everybody treat me like a crazy person thing, you know, and it's a great source of amusement and entertainment, and we live in a world where crazy is a term of abuse, you know, which I frankly think should be outlawed, you know. So you're sitting there. I know you don't mean harm, and I adore
you.
So I know you don't mean
harm. No,
and you're lovely. Absolutely, no. Absolutely. But it's a weird question because people go, "Are you all right? What do I do? Well, how do I prove whether
I'm
right?"
Well, I suppose you prove you're right by being here and smiling and being, and you know.
Anyway, so I'm a bit of a nervous wreck about interviews at all, to be honest, because on one hand I got record company quite rightly and everyone going, "Don't say anything," and the other hand I'm like, you know,
don't worry, we're just thrilled
that's
you're
why
here.
I sing.
I know, exactly.
Fact, what you see now before you is why I actually sing. When I see me singing, that makes sense. Right? Don't make sense talking, that's why I sing.
All right, look, Sinead, go sing. Thank you. Sinead,
her arms, she holds three cold babies. And the first word that they learned was please.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.